Kings of Macedonia, Philip II. Philip becomes king. Now, Perdiccas had decided to back Amphipolis and other cities in Chalcidice against the Athenians. Around 364 BCE, an Athenian force struck back and the king was forced to accept peace terms imposed by Athens, so that he switched sides and contributed troops to aid an unsuccessful Athenian attack on Amphipolis. After this, he abandoned the new alliance and sided with the Chalcidian cities once again, only to be defeated by another Athenian expedition. Perdiccas begged for peace and was granted it, but within a few years, he was flouting the agreement. He dispatched soldiers to help garrison Amphipolis, which was under renewed attack from the Athenians. We have more evidence for relations with Athens than any other matters during these years, but this is far from being Perdiccas III's only concern, and there were several bouts of fighting with the Illyrians. At one stage, the king came to believe that his men were surrendering too readily, confident that they would be ransomed and returned home. Perdiccas sent ambassadors to discuss terms of this, but he does not seem to have wanted to secure the men's release. When the delegation returned empty-handed, he had them tell everyone that the Illyrians refused to take payment and executed the captives instead. The deception was supposed to have stiffened the resolve of the rest of Perdiccas' troops to fight rather than surrender. In 360 BCE, a large army of Illyrians invaded Melusia, one of Macedonia's closest neighbors and equally exposed to the predations of the tribes. The Melusians managed to save many of their people and ambushed a substantial number of the raiders. But just like paying tribute, this didn't end the threat. In the past, the Illyrians had inflicted heavy defeats on the Melusians of neighboring Epirus, and they kept coming back. King Bardyllus was now well into his 90s, but remained tightly in control of his territory and able to field large numbers of warriors. While it may seem unlikely that an elderly man actually took the field, around the same time, a King Agelaus II of Sparta died at the age of 84 while bringing his army home from a campaign in Egypt. Life expectancy was low in the ancient world, but some tough individuals beat the odds and remained active into old age. And when you get to the successors period, you have Antigonus the One-Eyed. He was in his 80s as well, and he's killed on the battlefield. Upper Macedonia was Bardyllus' next target, and Perdiccas responded by mustering a large army and confronting the invaders. A battle was fought in late summer of 360 BCE, or perhaps the spring of 359 BCE. There is the usual uncertainty over the precise date, according to our calendar, nor any details known of this battle, and whether it was an open encounter or an ambush. But there is no doubt of the catastrophic defeat suffered by the Macedonians. Perdiccas was killed, the first Macedonian monarch known to have died at the hands of a foreign enemy. And we cannot say whether the defeat began with his death or whether he fell when his army was already beaten. Either way, some 4,000 of his men died alongside him, and in the aftermath, the cowed survivors could do nothing to stop the Illyrians from plundering freely. Macedonia's other enemies also scented weakness. Perdiccas III's son, Amystasis, was a very small boy, unable to take over. Instead, Philip was acclaimed as leader. Initially, this may just have been as an epitrophes, or on behalf of his nephew. A claim made by Justin the historian, perhaps implied elsewhere. Yet he may have been named king from the start, perhaps with the assumption that Amystasis was earmarked as his successor until he had produced a son of his own. Sadly, there is no detailed description of how Philip became leader of the Macedonians, which makes it even harder to settle the question of his precise status after the death of Perdiccas. Most of the evidence for choosing a new king comes from the era of Alexander, and especially the events after the latter's death without an obvious heir, making it hard to know how much was well-established tradition and how much was a product of a wholly new situation for an army whose conquest had taken it so far from home. Scholarly debate has a tendency to polarize between those who believe the Macedonians had a strongly entrenched constitutional practices and others who prefer to see everything as far looser, dependent on strength or the weakness of individual kings. No doubt the truth lies somewhere in between, since it is hard to imagine any society lasting so long without creating a strong and deep-seated traditions and conventions. The most obvious of these was the belief that only an Argead could become king. An assembly, Ecclesia, of Macedonians, adult men who, when called upon, served in the royal army, or had done so in the past, gathered to acclaim a new king, marking their approval by clashing spear shafts against shields. How this all worked is impossible to say, and we simply don't know whether this was a little more than formality or in any meaningful way a forum of genuine debate and discussion. Some scholars have suggested the assembly showed a strong preference in favor of the late king's eldest son as successor, perhaps because they felt that the monarch's sacred aura passed more strongly to his closest blood relation. Others will simply deny this, or at least feel that in the desperate situation following Perdiccas' disastrous defeat, common sense would overrule any sentiment of this sort when an adult brother of the king was available. In favor of a period of epistros is an inscription from Boeothea, Theban-dominated region of central Greece, which records visitors and donors to an oracle, and this inscription includes and Amisthus, son of Perdiccas, king of the Macedonians, and could refer to Philip's nephew. Otherwise, we have Justin's explicit statement and differing versions of the length of Philip's reign, which can be interpreted to support around 2 years or so as regent before he became king. Although Justin is far more from the most reliable of sources, the claim of a regency is an odd one to invent. Against this, if Amisthus was named king, then no coins were minted bearing his name. Nor is it clear how and when he was removed and formally replaced by Philip as monarch in his own right, rather than as the Epitropos. Amisthus was clearly not seen as too dangerous a rival, for he remained at court and, when old enough, married one of Philip's daughters. Given the willingness of the other Argreds to kill their close kin, this is surprising. Most of all, if he had actually been king, although it may simply tell us of Philip's growing self-confidence over this time, success followed success. Now, the sources for this: The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question. Leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.